This Sunday, April 29th, Brattleboro Common Sense is presenting a discussion titled Apartheid, From Gaza to the Reservation, featuring author, educator, and activist Norman Finkelstein and Lakota Sioux elder Alex Whiteplume. Norman Finkelstein joins us now to tell us more. Welcome, Norman.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What can you tell us a bit about your background and expertise?
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, attended graduate school at Princeton, and taught for many years, and have also written and lectured on the Israel-Palestine conflict and other subjects, wrote a book on Gandhi's doctrine of nonviolence, wrote a couple of books on the Nazi Holocaust, but most of my writing has focused on Israel and Palestine. And I just completed a new book on Gaza.
So this talk is about the parallels that can be drawn between the treatment of Palestinians in Gaza and Native Americans here in the United States. Can you talk more about this?
I can't claim to be an expert on Native Americans. I did once a considerable amount of research on the fate of the Cherokee Indians, compared it to the situation of the people in Palestine. Basically, the protracted expulsion and dispossession of the native population by this juggernaut, and reached the conclusion that on many salient points, the processes of dispossession and processes of expulsion and dispossession were very similar.
Is that because in both cases it was done by force more so, or that combination of legal proceedings? I understand that for the Cherokee, they were represented in the Supreme Court. They had been won, and then Jackson still forced them to move. Was there a similar situation in Gaza?
Well, when I wrote the chapter, it wasn't just limited to Gaza. It was focusing on the whole history of dispossession. And yes, there are, on many levels, there are striking similarities, commonalities. And among those commonalities is the use of the law in order to dispossess the indigenous population. And on occasion, the government's ignoring of the law on those very rare occasions when the law stood by the indigenous population, the government ignoring the legal rulings and proceeding with the dispossession process.
Why should people right here in the United States care about what's happening in the Middle East and the Israel-Palestine conflict specifically?
Well, the bottom line is that the conflict would have been settled long ago if the United States wasn't on the wrong side of the equation. And if it's steadfastly, blindly supported Israel, Israel's illegal and immoral occupation, and in the case of Gaza, the occupation is compounded by an illegal and immoral blockade of Gaza. If the United States has done that, I think it's largely because of a very powerful lobby, which, as in the case of guns, manages to distort the national interest in favor of a well-organized lobby.
I see. And so, Norman, is it safe to assume that you support the boycott of Israeli businesses?
You know, it all depends on what you mean by that. One has to make a distinction between tactics and objectives. Obviously, as a tactic, a boycott is unexceptionable. It's uncontroversial. It's impossible to, on any moral, legal, or political grounds, to question the legitimacy of it. But any tactic is inserted within a broader objective, and then you have to evaluate also the objective. If, for example, you are pro-life and you go on hunger strikes in order to close down an abortion clinic, well, of course, the tactic is perfectly legitimate to go on a hunger strike. However, if you are pro-choice, you would question the objective, and it's impossible, I think, to separate an objective from a tactic. The objective invariably colors the tactic, and I would say that insofar as the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement refuses to embrace international law in its wholeness, namely recognition of the Palestinian right to self-determination and statehood on the one hand, but also recognition of the Israeli right to self-determination on the other, and statehood on the other hand, then I would say that I have some differences with it.
I read that in 2008 you received a 10-year ban from entering Israel. Have you been there before, and do you plan to travel there now?
No, I spent a lot of time there between 1988 and 2004, but I've not been back, and it's unlikely I'll ever be back there. Israel is going through a period of what you might call it terminal lunacy. And at this point, it's probably banned more people than it's admitted, than it admits. It's in a state of, I would say, collective psychosis. And you can see that in evidence in its recent reaction to Natalie Portman's decision not to go, and now they're calling her an anti-Semite. This is a serious divorce from reality. That country is crazy.
And so what was it that led you to base your life's work on studying and speaking and writing about this Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, my life's work is about truth and justice. And before Israel-Palestine, there was Vietnam, there was the civil rights movement, there was the United Farm Workers, there was Central America. There were many other causes to which I lent my services and assistance. If this particular cause consumed my life, it's because on the one hand, it didn't find a resolution, and on the other hand, I'm not a quitter.
Excellent. Where can listeners go to learn more about the upcoming discussion in Brattleboro?
I'm not sure of the website, but I'm sure the organizers can supply you with the information.
I see. So we'll provide that at the end of the show. I had also heard that you recently had a video pulled from YouTube. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, me and my webmaster, Sana Qasim, we put together a wholly innocuous video commemorating the folks who have been killed during the recent nonviolent protests at the prison gate separating Gaza from Israel. And for reasons which frankly bewilder me, YouTube found it provocative and sensational, and they pulled it down, which I really have to say, in the annals of censorship, this really marks, it must mark a nadir. When you want to commemorate the dead, and YouTube finds that gratuitously provocative and sensational, well, that's pitiful.
Yeah,
It's an indication of how desperate Israel has become. It's trying to stamp out, trying to eliminate, trying to delete. Israel has become a giant delete button. It's mobilized all of its forces. It's galvanized all of its supporters to delete, 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 delete. It's a version of the little Dutch boy who's trying to plug up all the holes in the dike. But I don't think it'll succeed. They can delete till the end of time, but the number of murders, killings of innocents, in particular children, that it carries on a daily basis, at some point the whole dike is going to come tumbling down on them.
And do you see potential within the Israeli government for a shift in position, or have the hardliners on this issue really got a strangle on?
Well, there are no hardliners, and there are no softliners. It's united. There's a handful of dissenters. Maybe you'd need more than the fingers on two of your hands to count them. But I think if you add in the digits on your toes, you pretty much get the whole of the dissenting component of Israeli society. They're united across the board, and always have been, really, on the decisive questions bearing on Israel and Palestine. There's no real dissent anymore in Israel. The definition of hardliner just keeps shifting. In 1982, well, in 1948, Menachem Begin was considered a hardliner, even a fascist. Then he became a moderate. In 1982, Ariel Sharon was called the Butcher of Beirut after he presided over the massacres in Sabra and Shatila camps. But as this Israeli spectrum gallops to the right and further to the right and further to the right, he came to be seen as a moderate. And now Benjamin Netanyahu and his current coalition government, he's a certifiable maniac, and he's now considered a moderate. So on the one hand, there hasn't been significant dissension on the critical questions bearing on Israel and Palestine. And on the other hand, the definition of moderate keeps, moderate keeps shifting because the spectrum keeps shifting further, 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 and further to the right.
Gotcha.
At this point, it's gone just completely over the precipice.
So we only have a little bit of time left, but is there one last thing you'd like to make clear to the audience at home?
Yeah, I think the most important thing to bear in mind is Gaza is a tiny place. It's among the most densely populated places on Earth. 70% of the population consists of refugees. 51%, or over 1 million, consists of children. The place is hermetically sealed by Israel. And according to all UN reports, it's either already or imminently unlivable. 97% of the water in Gaza is unfit for human consumption. It's polluted. The people, the population, is being poisoned daily as it drinks that contaminated water. And they're trapped. They can't leave.
Well, thank you, Norman. That was very sobering.
Okay, thank you so much.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
That was Normal Finkelstein telling us what to expect at Apartheid, From Gaza to the Reservation, a discussion between Norman and Lakota Sioux Elder Alex White Plume on Sunday, April 29th at 2 p.m. at the First Baptist Church on Main Street